Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. Today on Foresight Friday Roundup, we're going to be talking about the impact of the coronavirus on medical practices from a clinical standpoint, and then the impact of the outbreak on medical practices from a financial standpoint. As always, our resident experts on Foresight Friday Roundup to comment on these topics are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Gary Bisbee, co-founder and executive chairman of the Health Management Academy. Hello, gentlemen. Very nice to speak with you again.
Morning, Dave.
If it's Friday, it must be Roundup.
Must be. I love that term, resident expert, Dave Johnson. It must mean we've just been around for a long time.
Nah, it means we got to write the script. That's what.
Oh, I got it. Okay.
Well, before we get started, I was just curious. Have either of you ordered anything online related to the COVID-19 outbreak? You know, something like masks or gloves, anything like that? And more importantly, did it ever get to your house?
Well, we've ordered one of those finger oximeters, finger pulse oximeters. Oh. One of the screwy things about COVID is that it depletes oxygen without the patient being aware that the oxygen is depleting. So we've ordered one of those, although it still hasn't arrived yet, to your earlier point. I also wanted to order one of those cool Kinza thermometers, but Terry, my wife, says we've got more than enough thermometers, so that hasn't happened yet.
Gary, how about you?
I've ordered nothing in that regard. However, my family has ordered a lot from Amazon. It's actually coming pretty regularly, I must say. So,
well, good. So you got some packages in front of your house that you're keeping an eye on, huh?
Yep, that's right.
Okay. All right, let's get started. Dave, over the past 2 weeks, we've talked about the impact of the outbreak on hospitals and the impact of the outbreak on health insurers. Now let's talk about the impact on medical practices. What are you seeing? What are you reading? What are you hearing about? How doctors are changing their practice models in response to the outbreak?
Sure, Dave. Sometimes a story paints the whole picture. A friend of mine had a sore throat, had a call with his primary care physician who suggested a virtual care referral to a specialist. He didn't think that was such a great idea for a throat condition. And before he knew it, the specialist's office was calling up saying, they'd noticed a referral in his chart, hadn't heard from him. Did he want a referral, a face-to-face referral? And most importantly, was he willing to come in? At that point, you could almost pick him up off the ground. Physicians, for the most part, are used to patients coming to see them, and they're just not coming. So the Commonwealth Fund study says face-to-face patient visits are down almost 70%. What's a physician to do? 54% of the doctors still work in independent practices. We pay them to do stuff, and there's less stuff to do. So they're hustling. They're reaching out to patients like they did to my friend. But probably the biggest thing, Dave, is just been the dramatic increase in virtual care. Telemedicine is up from 20% to 50% over the last month. 50% of physicians now offer telemedicine services. And that is just a remarkable amount of change in behavior in a short period of time. Shows what markets can do under pressure. And what I think is really happening is physicians are trying to figure out what the new normal is going to be in real time. And it's scaring the crap out of them.
Gary, you're talking to a lot of doctors. What do they tell you about what they're doing differently practice-wise?
I think the term for physician practices these days is hanging on. Dave's story is a good example of that. Obviously, many elective procedures have been postponed, or elective even diagnosis or treatment decisions. Nobody wants to go to see the doctor. Nobody certainly wants to go to a hospital if they don't have to. My guess is a lot of the physicians are, as I said, just hanging on at this stage of the game and looking somewhat askance at what is likely to happen once a crisis abates over the next, whether it's 2 months, 6 months, 8 months. Presumably there's going to be a huge influx of patients wanting to see the doctor. And then they're going to go from, as Dave said, needing to call patients to try to get them to come in to just being overwhelmed. Financially, who knows if you ever recover from something like this? I guess we'll talk about that next. But just in terms of the actual practice of medicine, it seems to me that the issue of just health of the population is not going to be well served by these sorts of delays. I do agree with Dave. Everything you hear from health systems to physicians is telemedicine is the new order. And I think we've discussed on this show before that a crisis accelerates trends that are already underway. And I think the backbone of the telemedicine has been set over the last several years. Now the crisis is forcing people to try it out. My guess is a lot of people are going to like it. So that is going to be a fundamental change. Whether or not what the financial implications of that are probably are yet to be determined. But that is the compelling change we've seen, no question.
Dave, anything to add to Gary's comments, especially this idea of where, you know, the office is empty right now and maybe a couple months from now it's going to be people hanging from the rafters?
Well, that really is the most interesting question. What happens after COVID-19 goes into the history books, hopefully sooner rather than later. And there will be enormous pent-up demand, as Gary suggests, and we'll see how the system accommodates that. I do believe, however, that much of the current care model, the way care is delivered, is often inefficient and often provides unnecessary care. And I'm wondering if this winnowing process that we're going through will change the fundamental shape of primarily primary care. So a lot more virtual, a lot more tech, a lot more chat bots, doing screening and so on. And that the role of physicians will shift to being one of more focused on prevention as much focused on prevention as on treatment. But all of that's ultimately predicated, as Gary noted, on payment models. And you've heard me say this probably a million times, we're not going to fundamentally change the way we deliver care until we change the way we pay for care. But that was already in the works. And I also agree with Gary that the crisis is accelerating the movement toward value-based care. And that's gonna fundamentally change the way physicians practice.
Yeah, remember, unnecessary care is both a function of supply and demand. And we frequently speak about it from a supply standpoint, but the reality is a lot of people, I would be included in that, if something is going wrong, you don't know what it is. So you're going to reach out and try to take care of it. And whether that kind of usage will change, I wonder. I wonder.
We'll see.
Yep.
Right. We'll see who's left to live out the vision you guys have described. Right. So that's a good transition into our second topic. Obviously related to the first, and that's how the outbreak is affecting medical practices from a financial standpoint. You know, I'm reading that many say they're going to close. I'm reading that many are going to sell. What's happening with all those private equity acquisitions that were so hot just a few months ago? Gary, what's your sense of the situation?
I mean, it's tough out there. It's tough for anybody that's on the provider side, and certainly physicians. One expects that there will be more M&A, whether that's hospitals, health systems, purchasing docs or arranging some kind of partnership with them, or physicians merging together in groups. Size counts in the situation that that we've got now and will presumably have going forward. So I do think there'll be a lot more consolidation among physicians' practices. That's for starters. Secondly, I think that in terms of private equity, I'm not sure this is going to change anything there. If anything, it might even accelerate it, because the independent physicians or small groups need help. They need protection. The risk is just too high. It's hard to look forward to this situation, this COVID situation being resolved anytime this year, maybe even next year. We don't have vaccines. We don't really have a drug to treat it. People aren't going to stay in their homes forever. They're going to have to get out. That's going to cause another surge. So not to be negative on a Friday morning, rainy Friday morning here in Connecticut to boot, but I do see matters are unsettled going forward. I think there's a lot of risk. I think some kind of consolidation will offset that. So my guess is you're going to see a lot of another wave of consolidation if the physicians can find somebody that'll take them, which may not be that easy, actually, as it turns out. So I think anything they can do to lower the risk, they're going to do, be my guess. Dave, what do you think?
Oh, I'm agreeing wholeheartedly with you on this, Gary. The practices themselves are just getting crushed, particularly the independent practices. Even with virtual visits, patient visits are down 60%, and revenue follows visits, and revenues are down 55%. I saw an MGMA projection that said 36% of practices expect to lay off personnel in May. Many have already done so. 60% will furlough personnel. So it is really tough out there. And this is coming on top of, as you mentioned, a consolidation wave where many independent physicians, for a whole host of reasons, just haven't been very happy in their practices. Risk is a big part of it. Administrative work associated with meeting regulatory requirements, much tougher than it used to be, adapting to the new technologies and so on. So I think you're right. This is going to accelerate change. Consolidation will continue, probably pick up. Many will retire. Many will transition. It's going to be a very different looking physician landscape in the not too distant future.
Gary, anything to add to that?
No, I agree. I think Dave and I agree on this one completely. It's tough. It's tough to be a physician these days. They're committed to it. You know, there's kind of a balance between the Hippocratic Oath and common sense. And a lot of the physicians, particularly that are right in the middle of treating the COVID patients, they may be committed to all this, but that takes courage to put themselves in a position where they're really encountering personal risk as well as risks for their families. So one thing seems obvious, but it bears repeating, which is God bless all of these caregivers that are in the middle of this, because they're just showing an amazing amount of courage, if you ask me.
Oh, yeah. I just want to amplify that. One of the encouraging statistics I saw was a survey that said 60% of physicians not treating COVID patients today are willing to do so. So they're stepping up and in heroic and selfless ways. I think we're going to look back at the spring of 2020 and remember that this was the time when medicine rediscovered its soul.
Yeah, great point. Great point. Yeah, I should really give my internist a call to find out what he's up to. He's usually my canary in the coal mine on these kind of things. So we'll see. Now let's talk about next week. Gary, give me one or two sentences on what you think will be the big story next week in healthcare.
I think from the standpoint of the health providers, recovery is the name of the game next week. Secondly, it's how people are going to react. The individual is going to react to being cooped up for the last 2-3 months and how all that works out through the summer and what the result of that is in the fall is a worthy discussion. The third one, which probably won't be next week, Dave, but what does inflation look like going forward with this multiple trillions of dollars being pumped into the economy? And you worry that could end up being a major problem for us going forward.
Dave, same thing. Give me a few sentences on what you think will be the big story next week.
I think it's beginning to dawn on people that we're going to be at this for a long time. That, you know, we've just had our stay at home here in Chicago extended to May 31st. There's all the discussion about the second wave, third wave, maybe potentially something in the fall, the vaccine, which is what we really need. Vaccine and cures still look to be a year, year and a half, maybe even 2 years away. And even once they're here, rolling those out are going to be a really substantial logistical challenge. So I think we're getting into that national mindset of we're really at war here and sacrifices are going to happen. And I think the country as a whole is starting to get used to that. And you're starting also to see some of the tensions surrounding that as Gary referenced. I'm actually more worried about deflation than I am about inflation. We saw what happened to oil prices this week where a barrel of oil actually went negative. And I've always thought oil prices were a little bit of a canary in the coal mine, to use Gary's phrase from earlier about what will happen with the general economy. You know, if you need to buy a car like we do, we're still driving cars with tape decks in them 6 months from now. Six months from now, we're going to be able to get a great deal because there's just all this inventory. So I think there's going to be at least short term real downward pressure on prices, and deflation is always scarier than inflation because with inflation you can raise interest rates. With deflation, the tools are less available and less powerful. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I think we clearly have a U-shaped recession here. We're going to see the deflation. How long that lasts, I don't know, but that's a good point. I think the longer standing problem is going to be inflation. And Dave, you're probably old enough, I know I am, to remember the last bout of inflation back in the 80s. And it wasn't fun. So at any rate.
Well, that's when I learned about arbitrage. I took my I took my student loan and put it into a money market fund and earned 10% on it and then paid my tuition bill at the end of the year rather than at the beginning of the year. Yeah. Made a few hundred bucks in the process.
Dave Johnson, the arbiter, starting right off there.
Well, maybe what we'll do next week is I'll put on our economist hats and talk about how this is all going to affect healthcare costs. So I think you guys brought up a great topic for next week. So well, I appreciate everybody's comments and your insights today. That's all we have time for right now. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed today, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. Thanks again for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.